The pride, passion, and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, Hour 3 Podcast.
Second half of the show is live. We'll talk to the commissioner of the Southeastern Conference in 30 minutes. And we appreciate you giving us a call now at 855-242-7285. Augie in New Orleans. Hello, Augie.
Hey, Paul. Happy International Women's Day.
Thank you very much.
Apropos, you have Angela on today. When you talk to the commissioner, it would be interesting if you could just ask him if he is keeping an eye on what's going on in the LSU athletic department, and is this something that his office would possibly make a comment on or possibly take action on down the line? You'll probably not want to answer that, but I think it would be good.
Yeah, I will. I can't speak for him, but I would say that the SEC monitors everything that goes on in the conference, especially something like this.
And it's a shame that you have to have outsider adult supervision, because at this point, I don't have a warm feeling that LSU is necessarily handling this well. And I know you're a big fan of Scott Woodward, but would you not agree that Scott is now on the clock?
Without a doubt. But I will also say this. This is not an athletic department problem anymore. This is an institutional issue.
Absolutely. But it has fallen square into Scott's lap, because Virge Ausberry and this Miriam Seeger person both work for him under his department.
Correct.
And if he does anything less than fire them, I don't think his reputation is going to overcome this. I know it will with me.
Yeah, and I'm sure Augie, the only thing people. I don't know, and I'm not blindly defending him because I haven't spoken to him, but
no,
I wonder in light of how this decision, in light of the investigation, which is clearly in the interim president's hands, how the decision was reached for the punishment of these two individuals. Who made that decision?
And that's why, at this point, you can't come out and condemn Woodward and, you know, crucify him.
Right.
Because I don't think he's actually taken a position. And honestly, I would fall out on the floor if these two survived and it was at the behest of Scott Woodward. I just don't see him as the kind of person, moral being, to let that happen. I mean, at best, it's a dereliction of duty of what those two did. At worst, it's enabling female abuse because of what they did. So pick your poison.
Let me ask you a question. As someone who lives down there and understands the law, why do you think the suspension was given in the manner? Why do you think they determined 21 and 30 days?
You know, I don't know. And I don't know if there are any state employment laws that say if you go past 30 days, they have some civil service appeal right. I don't know. I can't say that. Maybe 30 days and a month is just a good round figure. Who knows? 21 days is 3 weeks. That's the best I can come up with, not being an expert in Louisiana labor law. And then who knows what other things they may allege. They may allege that, you know, a female, a minority, you didn't do this to the other folks, so we're being discriminated against. They'll get an EEO complaint out of the thing. Who knows? I really don't know. But I think there's a point where, even as a prosecutor, if your case is weak, but you think, well, you know, a reasonable jury should convict these people, leave it up to the jury to make the call. And if they make the call, then society has spoken. And in this case, I think there's just massive outrage that these two still have their jobs. Now, it's a shame that they're the only two poster children left, but Les Miles can't be fired because he was already fired. Joe Oliva's gone, and we don't know if he really might be the hero in all of this. Alexander King is gone. The LSU Board of Supervisors, that's always been a cesspool in Louisiana, always been a cesspool. And, I mean, at this point, I'm looking around for the moral voice, the moral compass of LSU. And, Paul, I think you should ask Dale Brown to come on and to at least make us feel good about LSU and that there are decent people in Baton Rouge. And I want to say Angela's done a great job with this reporting. I know Rabelais has been covering LSU for years, and this obviously just – He wasn't aware of it, so it was covered up pretty good, because I think it would have been something Rabelais would have picked up. So you can see there were great links gone to within the LSU athletic department to cover this up. And I think if you had Victoria Jackson back on your show, she'd have a lot to say about this, don't you think, Paul?
Maybe we should have her back.
I think so. I think she would at least provide some interesting commentary about this, and not just how it applies at LSU, but we didn't know this was going on. At least the fans didn't. Now, of course, people in the administration did, and that's why we have a scandal today, because they didn't handle it properly. But you know what's going on at a lot of other schools, just intuitively.
Well, I would really like to know F. King Alexander's role in all this, because he certainly was high and mighty in ripping the SEC for playing football while Oregon State and the Pac-12 were not. And, he was also, if I remember correctly, Augie, hugging on Les Miles after they beat Texas A&M. And clearly the reason why Joe Oliva had to back down on firing Les Miles in 2015.
Yeah, and my whole opinion of Joe Oliva has changed, and it just shows you how those of us who are really not in the know, we're really ignorant. We rely on the media to give us the facts. And in this case, Joe is coming out. History has proven him to be the good guy in all of this. But the other one that I'm sure is sitting back just watching it and keeping a low profile and is glad that people are not talking about last football season is Ed Ogeron.
Right.
And as much as you can say about Ed, he is not at this point causing scandals at LSU. And I'll take that any day over what Les has given us. Thanks.
No, you're right. And this did not touch him as best we know. Thank you for the call. Kathy is up next. Kathy, good afternoon. Welcome.
Hey, Paul, how are you today? I'm a first-time caller, long-time listener from Scottsboro, Alabama.
Wonderful. It's great to have you on.
Yes, I wanted to make a comment to the gentleman who had spoken about an hour ago when he was talking about his young children and fitting the sports to their personalities and their temperament. I'm a mom of three sons who are now two in college and one that just graduated 2 years ago from Auburn. I'm actually an Auburn graduate myself, and I totally agree with his sentiments. We ran like crazy with three boys going from track to football to golf to basketball, but it's wonderful memories, and it's great for your kids to have a voice in what they're doing. As a matter of fact, my middle son is at Queens University of Charlotte on the track team.
Oh, right wow, now. That is fantastic. So, that's a really good school.
Great school. He's graduating May 8th. He's a senior. He's a thrower. And I remember when he came home in eighth grade and he told me he was going to be on the track team, I said, what in the world are you going to do? Because he wasn't very fast. And he said, I'm going to throw. And I said, throw what? So
no, you really brought up some interesting points. And I remember as a kid, my poor parents having to come watch me play baseball, of which I was an absolutely terrible player. And I could almost see them now with their hand over their face while I was trying to make plays in the infield and at the but parents don't care, as long as most parents, I should say, Kathy, and you brought back some great
exactly.
memories.
Yes, and it's such joyful. As a matter of fact, we were in Charlotte 2 weeks ago. Because, Evan's competitions are coming to an end. And, of course, with COVID, they missed the whole spring season last year. So it's precious few events left. But we have certainly enjoyed all the moments with all of our boys. So I look back that now as the youngest one graduated from high school last year. And then you really begin to treasure those memories once they begin to fade. What about, I had heard on one, I'm a huge Auburn fan, always have been since I was 7 years old and fell in love with Pat Sullivan as the quarterback at Auburn. What do you think the chances are of Sharif Cooper returning to the basketball team next year?
My gut feeling is I don't like the chances, but I don't have any independent information on that. I just think he's probably ready to move on.
Right. And I kind of see it as a shame. I know one of the commentators, of course, who would know, but thought that we could very possibly have a great run, and I think we will anyway.
I was asked on a Birmingham station today, Kathy, about Bruce Pearl, and I mean this season was doomed from the beginning once the university made the decision to self-impose. But I think anyone critical of Bruce Pearl is not paying much attention to his coaching ability. I think he's a stunningly great coach.
Is your schedule too packed to see a doctor about your erectile dysfunction? Well, with Hims, now you can get treated for ED without stepping foot outside your door. They're changing men's healthcare by providing access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. Hims provides access to doctor-trusted ED treatment options such as chewable hard mints, brand name treatments like Viagra, or generic alternatives for up to 95% cheaper. The process is simple and entirely online. Just answer a series of questions and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option. If prescribed, your medication ships to you free. No insurance needed. So what are you waiting for? Join the hundreds of thousands of trusted Hims subscribers and get treated. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/paul. That's hims.com/paul for your personalized ED treatment options. hims.com/paul. Hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies on product and subscription plan. This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to JetsPizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be.
Stunning, stunning. We are so pleased, and there's so much talent. I've watched every ball game. I'm one of those that I've watched them in all the years they lose, and now I enjoy watching them, obviously, when they win, and they actually lost more than they won this year, but still enjoyed watching, and the likes of JT Thor and Devin Cambridge, and right. I think we've got some really great kids playing, so I'm looking forward to next year.
Well, Kathy, thank you so much. It was great to hear from you.
Thank you. Glory Eagles. Have a great day.
What a pleasure. We'll take a break. Final hour, we will talk about a little bit about the women's tournament with Alyssa Lang, who covered it all weekend long as the anchor of the coverage. And the commissioner of the Southeastern Conference will join us shortly. And we will talk to him about what happened last weekend and a look ahead to this weekend and remember back to a year ago, a time that none of us will ever be able to forget. We'd like to, though. Back after this.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
We are back and appreciate you being with us on a Monday afternoon. And Logan is up next in North Carolina. Hello, Logan.
Hey, Paul. Happy Monday. How are you doing today?
I am doing well, Logan. Thank you.
Thanks. I just wanted to call in. I like the way you handled that guy earlier talking about two black female coaches. I don't know where we're still in that situation, but you handled it really well, and
thank you.
It just makes me sad that we still look at, you know, that's what he got out of the game. I mean, really, is that what you get out of it?
Well, Logan, yeah, I won't dignify much of what he said with a comment, but you know, we have both heard enough in our lives, and when people start to identify certain phrases, you know where they're going and you know where they're from, and that's fine. I don't really care what anybody does with their life or their views, but when they bring it out here, it has to be answered.
Exactly. And you always take care of those guys, Paul, and I appreciate it. I just want to comment really quickly on Alabama basketball. I saw the game against Georgia. It was kind of a nail biter more than I thought it would have been. It was kind of a close game, but I think Alabama has a chance. They've just got to get better. They got to clean up those turnovers, man. They just can't turn the ball over. You can't do that in a tournament and win. So I didn't want to see what you thought about the way they play.
I mean, Logan, there are some things they do that will make you a little uncomfortable, but their record is exemplary. And I think Nate Oates is just such a great coach. And a lot of it – a lot of it's going to depend on the matchups in the NCAA tournament. And certainly the SEC is a great preamble to that, and the fact that They may see Kentucky. Well, they've beaten Kentucky, yeah, obviously, this year. I don't believe they've beaten Kentucky in the SEC tournament in about 35 years. So that's a big deal.
I didn't like that matchup when I saw that.
I would agree. I think that early game is troublesome because, the atmosphere is always, this year is going to be similar. Kentucky will have a few fans there, and Kentucky is playing for something. Alabama is just trying to simulate what they'll be dealing with the following week.
Yeah, and I mean, they play so fast, so I know that's part of the whole playing fast. You're going to have turnovers, but
sure.
I don't know. I'm a little nervous, but I wanted to ask you a question, Paul, and this is kind of off topic, if that's okay.
Of course.
So I'm always hearing you talk about classic sports broadcasters. Do you think anybody of the modern-day broadcasters really hold up to the old guys, in your opinion?
Yeah, I mean, I think there are some. I think Joe Buck is certainly, in terms of the national broadcaster, someone that, and maybe because I remember his father, I think he's a classic broadcaster where, he never tries to inject himself too much into the game. I think there are a lot of really good broadcasters here, but, we tend to get nostalgic for those who aren't here anymore.
Yeah, I understand. I mean, I grew up watching Harry Carey call Cubs
sure.
games, but I think Eli Gohl is probably my guy.
I hear more and more people talk about Eli Gohl, and the fact I've known Eli most of my adult life makes it even more intriguing. But I think what he has accomplished from the fact that he came in after a legend, and the fact that he's from New York. It's just,
right.
I mean, I just shake my head at the success that he has had. And I will also make no bones about the fact I have no objectivity when it comes to Eli Gohl. He gave me my first job in radio. He's a very dear friend. But I want to make sure that's part of this conversation, but it wouldn't make any difference. He's still a brilliant broadcaster.
Yeah, I remember you telling that story last year, and he's kind of like the reverse of Mel Allen. It's kind of weird, all this New York to Alabama connections. It's like, it's really strange.
No, if you had told me in 1988, I think whatever year he got the job, would he still be doing it today? I'm not sure I would have believed it because, he had a lot to overcome. It doesn't matter if you're the Florida broadcaster or the Alabama broadcaster. Fan bases are very particular in what they like and what like. We had Mick Huber on the other day. He's the broadcaster from Florida. And he said he had a couple of, 4 or 5 years, and fans, he wasn't really sure whether fans were relating. And then he called, I think it was Warfel, to Chris Doering on the final play to beat Kentucky in Lexington. And suddenly he became very popular.
That'll do it. Yeah, that'll do it. Well, that's the thing with Eli. I mean, he came up, he didn't come up in the Bryant years, or he wasn't calling her the Bryant years. But for me, I don't remember a lot about Bear Bryant years, but he was.
But Logan, remember something about Eli. He was already there. I'll never forget on the day that Coach Bryant, I think it was the day he stepped down, I was a guest on Eli Gold's radio show. Eli had the first radio show in Alabama, I think. He opened the door for all of us that came after him, and I was certainly much later in the genre, but he knew the landscape very well, and he had done, by the time he took over, he had already done hockey and basketball and baseball, and he knew Alabama. He just didn't show up there after a bus ride from Vermont.
Wow, Eli called hockey. I need to hear an Eli Gohl.
Eli, in fact, I would argue that I think that's how he ended up getting to Birmingham. He was the minor league, the Birmingham Bulls hockey announcer. He was fantastic in hockey, and I have no idea how you broadcast hockey because it's such a fast sport.
Exactly. Yeah, it's super fast, and you have to be on top of everything. But I mean, not that he's always there. I just can't imagine that. I'll have to go back and look at some old clips.
Yeah, no, he was, Logan, he was great. Hey, thanks for the call. We're heading to a break. The commissioner of the Southeastern Conference. Greg Sankey will join us right after this.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
We'll talk more about the women's tournament where South Carolina was crowned the champion later in the program with Alyssa Lang. But our next guest was at the women's tournament all week and all weekend long. And, of course, handed out the trophy yesterday. He is the commissioner of the Southeastern Conference, Greg Sankey. Commissioner, thank you very much. And before we get to the men's, which certainly is on a lot of people's minds, appreciate you being here and your thoughts on being at a tournament which finished just like it did last year, but there was a lot on your mind and everyone's mind last year by the time the women crowned a champion in 2020.
As the week turned out last year, probably not enough on my mind at that point on Sunday in 2020. You know, I think we went long. Dawn was awesome when she was speaking during the trophy presentation. So we probably missed my comments. You know, I just spoke that 52 weeks ago, we were in that same place. Confetti falling, trophy presentation, you know, team on the floor happy, team in the locker room disappointed. Never imagining that on Thursday of that very same week, we'd be stopping everything. So that was one point I made. And Paul, the other yesterday in Greenville was the recognition of Dawn and Joni leading their teams at a championship level in this conference, two African-American women, in a building that we had not returned to since 2005 until 2017. We played four of our last five tournaments there, and we were there because of a change in a flag displayed and flew over the state capitol in Columbia back in that era. And when it was taken down, we came back to Greenville. You may recall, just following up on Dawn's comments about teams meeting late in the tournament this year, that also happened to be the year we had the two teams in the national championship. So great things can be done when we come together, and I think it was really an important moment as Dawn and Joni represented the conference today and really the future of our conference as well.
Commissioner, as we make the pivot toward Nashville this week, I know that as you're reflecting in those rare moments that you can maybe while you're working out in the morning, I am really interested in what you may be reflecting on as this year anniversary for the whole world is being remembered. What will you think about as you lead up to Nashville?
Well, for the moment, you know, focused on being successful this week, like we were last week, like we were the week before at indoor track and the week before that at swimming and diving and trying to support a championship in a healthy way. But I think embedded in the question is the reflection of what happened last year. You know, a little known fact is, we had a presentation planned, a press conference planned for Friday around media rights. That happened this past December. And so like today's activity was stopping some of the work we were doing to prepare for a Friday press conference. And then literally kind of figuring out where the virus was. I had a call with Ray Tanner on that Monday where we just talked about his team's performance last year in the women's tournament. And we talked about COVID-19. And I told him I had a hurricane stomach, which is like my description of when you're going to have those stressful weeks, like you have a bad weather system in the Gulf of Mexico during football season. He said, I think it'll be okay. I said, Ray, I think we're going to have some challenges ahead, never realizing that we'd be stopping come Thursday.
Yeah, and that media rights announcement was involving so many things, including the treetop story being football. And that is so interesting how that would have, you know, forgetting, not to take anything away from the basketball tournament, but that was an announcement that people had been anticipating and looking forward to. That was years in the planning, was it not?
It was, and in fact, you always move forward in those discussions to a signed agreement, and we still had some work to do. And really on Monday, Paul, I think the PGA made an announcement about its future rights. You saw a lot of turmoil, remember, in the stock market on this Monday last year as the COVID-19 realities became more and more front and center, and pretty quickly said, you know what, we need to put aside the final negotiating elements, stop that potential press announcement, focus on what's in front of us, which was supporting the tournament. And again, on Thursday, the world changed, making our Monday decision to have stopped that work on our future media rights actually a really wise decision in retrospect.
You mentioned some of the other championships that have preceded the women and now the men. And everyone had myriad thoughts going into even the winter sports. I'm particularly interested in your reflection back, because as football was so publicized and we lived in the moment every single day, some of these sports did not get the attention, and there was tremendous pessimism as well.
Oh, very much so, and a lot of questions. And Paul, I'll go back to the fall sports when we were in July and August with our coaches and our student athletes, not just football, but volleyball, soccer, cross country. What's going to happen? How are we going to do this? Will we have a meaningful opportunity to compete? And again, go back and remember, really the NCAA walked away from us. We didn't walk away from the NCAA in conducting fall competition. You know, it's Board of Governors set this 50% support threshold across the country, not tied to any really objective medical data or what might be accomplished, just about participation. And so we were left without national championships, yet still committed to support healthy competition. A lot of work to do so. And I'm as proud of what we achieved in naming cross-country champions and conducting volleyball competition, which now extends into the spring because the NCAA delayed its national championship. Same with soccer. But in soccer, you know, we conducted our championship in Orange Beach a little bit later in November than usual. All 14 teams present. No disruption, no student athletes tested positive at our championship for COVID-19. Ultimately, Vanderbilt won that tournament championship, and it then set the stage for Sarah Fuller to participate in the Vanderbilt at Missouri football game that next Saturday, which, remember, on the day Vanderbilt won that soccer championship, it was not a game we had scheduled. It was going to be Arkansas at Missouri and Tennessee at Vanderbilt, and then because of COVID issues, we switched quickly. And that just set a stage, you know, in Sarah's life. She was part of the presidential inauguration event, which I say because trying matters. And if we don't try, those opportunities don't materialize. Kentucky swimming and diving, just to extend my answer to your question, won its first women's swimming and diving championship in its history as a member of the Southeastern Conference. That doesn't happen unless we try. Florida men's swimming and diving, ninth straight. South Carolina women's basketball winning again. And the opportunity for me to say thank you to them and them to me for the opportunity. Those are the reasons we work so hard to make it possible.
And Commissioner, I want to pick up on that because, you know, that was, you know, while everyone had a million opinions on whether college football should go off, you were very consistent on at least trying to do it. You had no idea what was around the corner, but I want you to elaborate a little bit more, because that's a simple answer to a very complex issue, but it worked.
It did, and there were a lot of pieces to it, Paul. You know, I can jump over here and find some notes. April 14th, you know, I've said this before. I talked to a biostatistician, tells me take as long as you can to make major decisions because you'll have better information. You go to late June, we had a video conference of our football student athletes that ended up being in the Washington Post because someone without our knowledge recorded that video conference and provided it to a reporter. But you know what? I'm actually really proud of that circumstance because we were being very transparent and honest with our student athletes. Alante Taylor, football player at Tennessee, said, I'll be swabbed every day, even when we didn't know what that meant, if I can play football on Saturday. But I'll tell you, a really important moment was the weekend after July 4th. So we're talking about Friday, Saturday, Sunday, the 10th, 11th, and 12th. Individual conversations with our presidents and chancellors, all 14. Some of those calls were about 30 minutes, some were 2 hours, where I just asked, what do you think about the fall, your return to campus, return of residential life? How's instruction going to be formatted? What are you doing with testing? How do you see us working to support competition in the fall? And every one of the 14, whether they had been in their position for more than a decade or some for merely a week, said, let's be patient. Let's take our time to make decisions. And of any asset that I felt I had, as much as the stress and pressure was great. In fact, I think you and I talked about when will we make decisions. And I pushed the timeline out a little bit further in July than I had when you asked me that question in May and June. It was because I knew our presidents and chancellors were aligned on the timing around decisions. And Paul, that was one of the great assets that we created together. And then, you know, to move forward and to hear student athletes in football, volleyball, soccer, cross country ask about providing meaningful competition, that was another really important element of our decision. And, you know, my bias was to try to play, and on many calls, it wasn't about TV and tickets and money. It was about providing the opportunity. And I'll give you some context to that. I didn't know if we could provide the opportunity, but I thought we owed everyone involved the chance to try. And it comes back to this. You know, 2019, you know, Joe Burrow won the Heisman, magical national championship year for LSU's football team. It was their time. In 2020, we have no idea whose time it may have been. You know, Devontae Smith was not on the Heisman watch list, yet look what happened. I had no idea that would happen. The Sarah Fuller story, the Kentucky swimming story. You know, Arkansas men's basketball, I think, has won 11 straight SEC games. A great story for Eric Musselman as a head coach and for that team and that fan base. And, you know, I could go on and on. It's not as if we could have just sat on the sidelines, not played, and we just, like, reset next year. People would have lost those opportunities. And so for us to try was really important, because once time passes, it doesn't come back around in the same sort of way. And this was the time for young people to have an opportunity.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-hour energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5hourenergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5hourenergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%. 10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships. Your skills. Your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/network.
And finally, Commissioner, that piece of the puzzle, this experience, which we will remember later in the week, how has that changed you as the leader of the Southeastern Conference?
I was asked that question earlier today, and I'm going to be honest that it makes me uncomfortable, because it becomes too much about me and not about what we are trying to achieve. But if we can set aside that, the conversation's not about me, it's about what is it that we can achieve and why do we work so hard to provide the opportunities and the connection. You know, I had two great leaders who preceded me in this office, Mike Slive and Roy Kramer. And, you know, I called Roy because we sadly lost Mike, you know, almost 3 years ago. I called Roy and said, hey, what'd you do when you had to shut everything down for a global pandemic? And he laughed and said, this one's on you, boss. I didn't have to deal with that. And so it gives you an opportunity as a leader to stand on your own, not in anyone's shadow. So, you know, personally for me, there's meaning there. I think there's a validation, not that I make decisions in any perfect way, but style and thought and approach has been encouraging to me to look back and say, well, I could make you a list probably as long as my arm of where I miss things. But a lot longer list of where we got things right. And I mean that collectively, because, again, that's not about me. And then lastly, I go back to, you know, a lot of things we communicated, a lot of PowerPoint slides on Zoom, Paul. And you can imagine it's a challenge to make those really interesting and exciting. But some of what we identified in almost a prophetic way back in April is exactly what happened. You know, one of the great statements I made on a slide, I think in May, was when we start, whenever it is, we will encounter the unimaginable. You know, yesterday, about 3 hours before our basketball championship game in Greenville, the power went out. We didn't have, fortunately, the arena had the backup plan. We did, and that was unimaginable. But when you think about Masters Week, remember, we canceled or postponed 4 football games. That was unimaginable. You can't plan for all of that disruption. And so that's just kind of one example of a lot of the advanced thinking that proved to be right, guided us on our decision-making. Everybody contributed. Yep, there were moments of frustration, moments of disagreement, but then the ability to celebrate some success like we did yesterday. And, you know, the week ahead, I hold my breath. I don't know. We COVID test every day. We formed a partnership with a company called PAE that's made this seamless. But when those results come in, you know, we're at the mercy of the virus, regardless of how many states open back up. COVID is among us, and we all have to be attentive to maintaining healthy approaches individually and collectively so we can realize what we're hoping to see in Nashville, which is a great tournament, the crowning of a champion.
Commissioner, as always, thank you very much for your time. It's a pleasure to have you on here.
Thanks, Paul. And we had a lot of conversations. And believe it or not, I've gone back in the last few weeks and watched every one of those. And I appreciate the ability to engage and explain and actually be challenged from time to time. So thank you.
Thank you very much. I look forward to the next time. The commissioner of the Southeastern Conference, Greg Sankey, joining us from his office, and we will take a short break and, of course, look ahead to the SEC men's tournament beginning Wednesday night live from Nashville.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
And we are back for the final hour and change of the Monday afternoon broadcast. You want to give us a ring? We are more than happy to take your call right now at 855-242-7285. Let's check in with Ricky, who is in Mississippi. Hello, Ricky.
Hey, how you doing, Paul?
It's great to hear from you, Ricky. Thank you.
It's been a while. That was a good interview, man. He's such a modest man, isn't he?
He's fantastic. And you know, when I asked him that last question, I didn't mean to put him on the spot, but I will also say, without his leadership, we may not have had a football season. So. I think we were all interested in what he had to say.
Yeah, that was a great interview. I was just thinking this past year, you know, it's kind of strange to see the Mississippi State women get put out in the first round.
Man, that
it's a strange year, man.
Where's Vic when you need him?
Really? Yeah, he went to Texas. Flew off to Texas, huh? But I'm going to give her a pass. I think she's going to right the ship, hopefully. Under a new regime, and you know, it looked all year that they just didn't know, you know, who, you know, it was, it's like they just couldn't follow the leadership. I mean, they didn't have any, you know. It's like, no, you take it.
Well, Ricky, remember, I mean, they had somebody, they had a Mount Rushmore coach. And, you know, transition is difficult. I'm not.
But I think
patience. I think a lot of strange things. This basketball season, men's and women's, it will go down as the strangest of all time. When you watch a team like Duke get blown out in the most critical game of the year with the greatest coach perhaps in the history of the game.
Right. And look at the failures of Kentucky.
Exactly.
North Carolina.
Michigan State. I mean, you got Hall of Fame coaches all over the place. You know, some are out of the tournament, some are scraping to get in. This is an unprecedented year. Hey, thank you, Ricky. It's always a pleasure to hear from you. You call again. We'll take a break. Alyssa Lang in the final hour on the women's tournament. And more of your phone calls at 855-242-7285. A lot to do before we close it down here in about an hour. We hope you'll stick around.